No, he shut the door.
No, we can give him a couple of minutes. Hey, man. Good seeing you,
Yeah. We see the next.
man. Great years.
Challenging. I've seen many times.
Very nice to meet you.
Hi, John.
Hey, John. Not sure where that came from. I don't think we need that at the moment. Okay, I'll be on it. Linda. Morning. How are we doing as far as time goes? Just a minute. Hey, Con.
This way.
Okay, I think we're got a quorum. Still got a few people signing in, but that's okay. There we go. So welcome to our Sunday morning gathering, working with a book called The Book of Mastery, which is book one in the, I believe it was the second trilogy. And right now we're working up to about four trilogies. So the message keeps expanding. And I trust that no matter what, this is not about measuring what level you're on, because the information or the growth or the challenges that come through are exactly what we need in this moment in time. So there's no, it's not like the first, not like the first grade, the second grade, third grade, fourth grade, right? It's all happening at the same time. So I'm going to suggest we take a moment to just get connected with one another, get a sense of our connection. And maybe all of the hundreds, maybe even thousands of people all over this planet who are working with similar material, who are desiring to do some of the same things, create a vibration of love and peacefulness, to identify ourselves with higher consciousness, and not rejecting lower consciousness, but realize that when we are in lower consciousness, we are extremely limited and can tend to be pulled into the negative side of things. You'll hear the refrain quite often, I am free, I am free, I am free. I recall Ram Dass one time, one of his talks, he was saying, you know, he said, I've meditated for 30 years. I've done service work. I've done this list of all, done psychedelics, done this, done that. Listed all of these things that he did in order to be, in order to get high. He said, the problem is that once you get high, you're always going to hold on to it, but it always disappears. And then you got to struggle and work some more to get another one. He said, I realized that the trip, the earthly trip, is not about getting high, it's about getting free. And that can mean different things to different people. But it made perfect sense to me because I had spent my life doing a lot of the same things. Catching that, trying to catch the dream. Whereas the real trip is all about, not about getting high so much, but about getting free. I am free. So are you. Unless anybody has anything they want to... Oh, yeah, let me mention this. One of our classmates had asked a question about, could we spend some time... We're not going to do that this week, but we can do it some other time if you'd like. Could we spend some time talking about reincarnation and also talking about what brought you to this particular pathway? And so I'd like you to just let that churn around a little bit. And if you'd like to spend one of our sessions on Sunday morning on those two things, or any others you might want to do that are not specified in the book, let me know and we'll set it up, okay? So is there anything that anybody has that we want to pick up on before we get started with the book?
I'm all for doing that, Jerry, the reincarnation and what path got us here.
Okay. Sounds like that's something that most people are kind of interested in. This book does not get into talking about it too much. It just sort of assumes that there's much more happening than just this lifetime. Because if it's just this lifetime, I don't know about you, but I'm screwed. Okay.
Okay. Exactly.
I got a lot more work to do, you know.
Oh, yeah. There's more to do.
Well, the way it came out a couple of weeks ago, which was really, really simple, was one of our teachers said that the lesson for Earth School, Planet Earth School, the lesson is to hold everyone and everything in unconditional love. Now, that's a wonderful, wonderful aspiration. But if you really look at it, am I going to be able to complete that task in one lifetime? And I don't know about you, but for me, I'm still working on a few things, all right? And so it almost makes this whole idea of, let's say, other lifetimes or reincarnation, just a fairly obvious truth. Anyway, that's just an aside. I'm on page 229. And you can be on any page you like, but we're going to be starting on page 229. I don't know why I'm so wound up. I know why I'm wound up this morning. I'm talking this morning. So I'm going to need to end a little bit early this morning. 229, the Book of Mastery. Here is an example of this. Example of reality and illusion. Here's an example of this. Someone harms you. You can perceive the self as harmed. You can see the one before you as harmful. Or you can make a new decision. The divine exists in all opportunity. And an opportunity before you like this is to claim the divine self outside of the harm, beyond the harm, outside of the realm of harm. Who is ever harmed but the personality self? Do you understand this? The divine self or the Christ itself, the truth of who you are, cannot be harmed. back to Ram Dass again, I remember. He said, let's suppose that I was taking students. He said, I'm not really, but I'm just using that as a metaphor. Let's suppose, and the first student I get comes along and says, one of the reasons why I'd like to be one of your students, Ram Dass, is because you live in California and I live in New York and I hate New York. And Ram Dass says, okay, well, if we want to continue this let's pretend thing, is that your first task is to stay in New York. Because you need to realize New York is not doing anything to you. New York's just being New York. You think it's doing something to you, and that's part of the problem here. It's like when there's a little Buddhist center created in outside of Washington, D.C., and it was fairly close to the Beltway, which obviously was a lot of traffic. And one of the students complained to the master and said, Master, this traffic is just disturbing my meditation. And the master was just quiet for a minute. And he said, He said, are the cars coming in here and bothering you? Or is your mind going out there to the cars and that's what's bothering you? What? Oh. The cars doing anything to you? Is the traffic doing anything? Or is traffic just being traffic? And that would be very, very interesting if we were to apply that to certain people in our lives, whether they're on the news or not. We know them personally or not. Is that person doing anything to me? If they're harming anything, are they harming my personality or my divine consciousness?
Jerry?
Yes.
There was, in relationship to what you just said, there was this Buddhist monk from overseas somewhere who came to the United States and was staying at a friend's house in New York. And he was meditating one morning, and it was the morning that all the garbage trucks were coming around. It was very noisy. And when he got through, the gentleman he was staying with apologized to him for all the noise, even though there was nothing he can do. And he said, what was there to apologize for? I was thinking, wow, how kind of them. So there's that perception, you know, there's a job being done. He was from India. India, there's not a whole lot of, there's a lot going on. So he felt, oh, how kind that they were picking up the garbage. So the noise was more of a blessing than a annoyance.
Yeah. It's reminiscent, Paula, of one of the priests, Benedictine priests, who started the movement called Centering Prayer. Which I know I'm not going to go into the whole procedure, but he was teaching this technique. And one of his students came up to him and said, you know, I'm spending all of my time going back to those anchoring words that I'm supposed to tell myself. I must have done that about 1,000 times during my 20-minute meditation. And he said, you're not doing anything wrong. He said, be grateful for those thousands of times that you called yourself back into God's presence. Oh. Oh. So maybe it's not just about being quiet.
Yeah.
Maybe it's even about embracing the noise as being part of the whole picture. Who is ever harmed but the personality self? You understand this? The divine self or the Christ itself, the truth of who you are, cannot be harmed. Nothing can be taken away from that. When you self-identify through your lower nature, you are setting yourself up for hurt and for fear, because that's the part of you that is hurtful and afraid. But when you know who you are, which is your teaching, I know who I am in my truth, you are unafraid, and you are not harmed by the judgment of others, by their perceptions of you, and you are not controlled by the edicts of a culture that says you are not allowed to express yourself in this manner. Throughout time, those who claimed the Christ or the divine self were persecuted in self-righteousness. Self-righteousness is righteousness of the small self. Do you understand this? It'd be as if where the fear comes from, for example, it'd be as if, let's suppose you were an alcoholic. And you were living with a whole bunch of other alcoholics. A lot of your family were, let's say, in the same boat, same category. And you decided, through the grace that was given to you, that you were going to enter into recovery. You're going to start getting well. You're going to stop drinking, and you were going to start working the 12 steps, and things were going to change. You know, and so you decided to do that. Well, guess what happens to all the people around you? They don't like that very much, because you have decided that I'm going to get rid of this addictive process in my life. And here's all these other people feeding their addictions, and you are a challenge to them. They want you back to where you were, because when you were back to where you were, I wasn't being challenged by you. Now, all of a sudden, you're getting well and you're getting healthy. I don't like that very much. When you know who you are, which is your teaching, I know who I am in my truth, you are unafraid, and you are not harmed by the judgment of others, by their perceptions of you, and you are not controlled by the edicts of a culture that says you are not allowed to express yourself in this manner. But don't be fooled, right? You are probably going to be rubbing a lot of people the wrong way. And you might have to experience some of those consequences. Doesn't make them bad or wrong. They're just afraid. We got a lot of people right now who are very afraid. How am I holding them? In outrage? Suppose I was dealing with a 3-year-old who was very afraid. Would I be outraged that the 3-year-old is very afraid, or would I treat him gently? Guess how old my ego is? About 3. Oh, I'll say no. It's grown a little bit, right? It's about 10 or 11 these days, okay? Pre-adolescent. Can't wait for adolescence to come along. I didn't do puberty value roll the first time, right? Throughout time, those who claimed the Christ or the divine self were persecuted in self-righteousness. Self-righteousness is righteousness of the small self. Do you understand this? It doesn't come from divine consciousness. It comes from consciousness that's fearful. You cannot be self-righteous and be the divine self. You can't be in it. Well, let's put it this way. You can't be in higher and lower consciousness at the same time. You can in higher consciousness, you can recognize that there is a lower consciousness that might be in conflict, but you're not buying into that as being the truth. You are here, and your light goes before you. The light never has to justify itself, nor will it ever. For the light to justify itself loses its potency and says to the darkness, "You have to know my name." When did a lamp ever excuse her brightness in the dark room she illumines? And as Margot likes to remind me, the light has never gone out. And by the way, it never will. No matter what's happening in the outside world, light's never gone out, and never will.
Hey, Jerry.
Yo.
Hey, thankful to be here. this reading is really timely for me. I went to an AA meeting yesterday morning. I was going to make it my home group. And there's a guy there that's probably has untreated mental illness. I think he's sober, but he's negative. And I got there like 2 minutes after the meeting started. The only seat open was right next to him because people don't like sitting next to him. And so when I sat down, I offered out my hand. I was like, hey, how you doing? And he slapped my hand away. And he says, why are you always late? So I got to sit with that for the whole, I didn't respond, just sat down. But of course, my mind was turning over, you know, that whole process. Like, I was just trying to be kind to him. I was just trying to extend some goodwill. But yeah, it was my personality that was turning it over. And it took me a while, you know, actually all day to kind of process it from a higher place. But really interesting that this whole page is kind of about that thing. So good to be here. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg. Yeah, it's a little bit of a different approach of deciding which aspect of self am I working out of. If I am fearful, if I am anxious, if I am angry, annoyed, then I'm probably working out of my lower consciousness. Again, not a bad thing, it's just limiting. Now, what I realize is that I can have all of those things going on. The annoyance, the aggravation, the hurtful feelings, the whatever else, and be in a level of higher consciousness. Know that that's going on, but know that they don't define me. Say, oh, isn't that interesting? Here I am annoyed at somebody, right? Who is obviously somebody in pain. And I go, oh, I didn't realize that. As soon as I realize this is a person in pain, all of a sudden, my whole outlook shifts. I remember a friend of mine was talking about, he was at a cocktail party, and he was talking to a psychiatrist. And he was talking about he was a counselor at the time. He was talking about one of the clients he was working with that was just a royal pain in the behind. Somebody just annoyed. And he kept on talking about this. And the psychiatrist looked at him for a moment and said, John, that was not his real name, but said, John, do you ever have a toothache? He said, yeah. He said, who do you think about when you have a toothache? What do you think about when you? So I'm thinking about me and I'm thinking about my toothache. And then all of a sudden I went, a person in pain, what are they thinking about? What are they expressing? What are they getting wrapped up in? And I can either honor that lovingly, or I can react to it from lower consciousness, saying, well, who the hell do you think they are? I was just trying to be nice. You understand the teaching? We are teaching you very important things about the lives you will encounter as you attest to your own divine worth. It's not a cakewalk. It's not a party for the small self. Blessed are the ones who are persecuted, for theirs will be the kingdom of heaven. What a horrible teaching, you might say. Here's what it means. When you are persecuted by your lower nature, you are given the opportunity to rise, and in the lifting, you are blessed. You are given the opportunity to rise, and in the lifting, you are blessed. We've used that example so many times before in the past of being awake, being aware, and then falling asleep, falling into forgetfulness. And that we have a choice when we become aware again. And Greg, the example you gave, I think, is perfect for this, of allowing myself to become aware again. And once I become aware again, I see things very, very differently than the way I did before. And I can respond to them very differently than the way I did before. The metaphor that I used a couple of, probably at least a year or so ago, is imagining that you're in a shopping mall. And it's around Christmas time. So there's a lot of frenetic activity going on. Kids are happy and crying at the same time. You know, everybody's filled with expectations, wanting to do this, get this done, get that done, do this, do that. And you're all wrapped, and you're waiting online at Starbucks, and the line seems to be getting longer than shorter. And you really need a cup of coffee. And so, you know, you got a lot of stuff going on with you, and you're being affected by all of this frenetic energy that's going on. And all of a sudden, you look over to one side and you notice there's a little elevator over here that brings you up to the second or third floor of this mall. So, I'm going to try to see what that elevator is like. And you walk over to the elevator and you get on, and you get off at the second floor. And there's a balcony there. And all of a sudden you look over the balcony and here's all of this frenetic activity going on. But somehow or another, you're not caught up with it because you're at a higher level of awareness. And you all of a sudden you become aware of saying, that's not who I am. That's just what's going on down there. That's just New York being New York. I can see this from a higher level of consciousness. And from seeing it as a higher, from a higher level of consciousness, it's completely different than what I might have been caught up in before. Does it open my heart? Does it close my heart? When you are persecuted by your lower nature, it might not be the best choice of words. When you are affected by the fear and the anger and the comparison and the duality of your lower nature, when you are allowing yourself to be affected by that, and you are consciously aware, you are given the opportunity to rise, and in the lifting, you are blessed. When you are provoked to change, you may choose the way you change. Uncomfortableness is always, well, I won't say always, but most of the time, if we have even a little bit of awareness, something that makes me uncomfortable, right, wakes me up a little bit and says, I could see peace instead of this. How could I see this differently? How could I hold this differently? When you are provoked to change, you may choose the way you change. When you are discussed, you have to listen or not, depending upon your requirements. But the name you hold, I am, I am, I am, will not be persecuted. It cannot be. So Greg could have gotten up from the chair and stood in the back of the room. What the hell with this? I'm going to sit next to this guy. Huh? Or stay there for a while and, you know, started the process of working this through. Starting the process of working this through. And part of that process, I'm sure, was being able to see this other person as being hurt or wounded or scared or frightened or threatened. Threatened even by kindness. And I don't have to get wrapped up. Excuse me, I don't have to get wrapped up in somebody else's fear. The small self who invests in her purse, in her appearance, in her negotiations with her fellows, in the way she requires to be known, may be persecuted in her expression, but the divine self who is there to be known is never harmed. New York's just being New York. The guy sitting next to me is just being the guy who's sitting next to me. He's not doing anything to me. Well, enough of this teaching, you say. Who wants this? It's uncomfortable. I don't like this crap. Let's go back into the peace and love stuff. Let's go back and let's pretend. Well, enough of this teaching, you say. Who wants this? We must explain to all of you that an initiatic path has certain requirements, and the Christ itself, that which you truly are, will call into manifestation whatever circumstance she requires, whether or not it has been outpictured in your life for you to know yourself through. Greg, I hope you don't mind. I'm using you as an example again. Is that okay?
Perfectly fine. Yeah, absolutely.
So if we were to add Greg's experience to that last paragraph is, I chose to sit next to somebody in pain. I chose to sit next to somebody who in my mind was rejecting my small self so that I could come into a deeper, kinder, more gentle awareness, not only of the truth of who I am, but the truth of who he is too. I got to that meeting 2 minutes, I set it up. I got to that meeting 2 minutes late to piss this guy off. Because that might wake him up. I'm not in charge of that one, but it might wake him up as well. There's a really fine line of distinction here between predestination and the choices we make to learn from. But the essential element here is that we've set up an agenda for ourselves before coming into planet Earth that we're going to learn from. And there are all sorts of different circumstances in life that are going to show up. They're going to put me in that space of learning. Matt? I'm going to ask you to talk into the microphone if you don't mind.
My father died a couple of weeks ago. And as what usually happens during that time of stress and grief and sorrow is a lot of emotions come out. I, going into that, I wanted to make sure that, you know, those that grief and stress and emotions will eventually calm itself out. But I didn't want anything to happen during that, you know, intense time period that would make it more difficult for my siblings and I to do. Continue on in our relationships somehow. So we were deciding the funeral arrangements and six grandsons who were going to be the pallbearers. And my daughter came to me and she said, I don't want to be the pallbearer. And one of my sons, who was one of the pallbearers, said, yeah, I'll step out and you can be a pallbearer. And then my daughter then told me later that one of my brothers had been very upset and actually told her, you know, women cannot be pallbearers, and said you should not be a pallbearer. So part of that was, you know, obviously the dad in me is very, my daughter can do whatever she wants to do. But another part of me was, you know, my brother is in hurt. My brother has a difficult relationship with his daughter. There's all sorts of other things that might be going on in that regard. So luckily I was prepared for that phone call when my brother called. And I could stand in my truth. I could stand that this is the way it was going to be. And he backed off. But in seeing, I wanted not to affect our relationship. And how could I do that? And part of that was looking at him, not only his small self and the pain that he might be into, but looking at his larger self, his real self, and looking at that somehow his real self gave a gift to me, gave a gift to my daughter, that, you know, whatever pain that he was going through that caused him to say and do the things that he did, was a pain that his larger self decided to do. So that, you know, it's a lot easier to continue. continue that relationship and to see that person, the Christ of being, if I can see him as him again, through his action, maybe, you know, this guy, is worth. I hope that that's part of my learning.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks for that. I'm sorry, we got here. Okay. Well, enough of this teaching. Who wants this? It's making me uncomfortable. We must explain to you, all of you, that on the initiated path has certain requirements, and the Christ itself, that which you truly are, will call into manifestation whatever circumstance she requires, whether or not it has been outpictured in your life for you to know yourself through. This does not mean you call disaster to you. Why would you do that? It means you call the opportunity to lift above the needs of the small self. I'll say that again. It means you call opportunity to lift above the needs of the small self. I have the need to be esteemed, calls you to the lessons in esteem. I have the need to be justified, calls the lesson to you. I have the need to be the worst one here, calls the lessons to you as well. And these are gifts, my friends. Don't run from the room. These are gifts, my friend. Don't run from the room. He's not running from the room, they're saying, but there are days he wishes he could. But as we said to him, and now we will say to you, just imagine you were Paul Selig for a while. And then in some ways, it doesn't seem like you have a moment's peace because the guides are always talking. Maybe you spend a couple of hours doing dictation and the rest of it doing whatever else you do in Maui, right? But it's kind of always there. It's always sitting on my shoulder. It would be very difficult for me to shake that awareness there. But living our normal everyday existence, it's very easy to shake that awareness. It's very easy to get wrapped up in the cares and concerns of the day, whatever they might happen to be, right? And lose track of who we truly are. He's not running from the room, but there are days he wishes he could. But as we said to him, and now we will say to you, you don't get off without your homework. You can run, but you can't hide. Okay. And when you do this work, you go into a new claim that there is nothing more important than the freedom of the true self, that there is nothing more important than the liberation of the soul, that there is nothing more important than being in truth. Let me read that again. When you do this work, you go into a new claim that there is nothing more important than the freedom of the true self, that there is nothing more important than the liberation of the soul, that there is nothing more important than being in truth. We use the word being intentionally. When you are being in truth, it is your expression. In other words, just kind of flowing forth. It'd be like there are certain people in your life that you really enjoy being around. You know, it's not only that they might be kind or wise or gentle, but they're in their truth. And that touches us, whether we're conscious of it or not. That's why we like to hold little babies. You know, because they're just naturally in their truth. It's going to take them a little bit of time to forget. We use the word being intentionally. Now, the truth itself is like the light. It does not need to justify itself because a lie will fall away in the face of truth, no matter what is said or perceived. It will fall away in time because the vibration of truth is higher. Here we go. On this morning, I claim that my jurisdiction, what I perceive, because as I perceive it is before me, and what I perceive is my jurisdiction, is in alignment to the highest vibration available to me now. And as I lift the world before me to this agreement, to be seen in worth, to be in accord with truth, I dispel the lies, I move away the shadows, and the truth of who I am calls victory to me. The truth of who I am. Truth of who I am, truth of who you are. I'm going to suggest we take a few minutes to put your stuff down. You can close your eyes if you like, yourself get comfortable in your spot. Couple of deep breaths. Kind of allow your breath to find its own natural rhythm. Pulsing of your heartbeat. And to imagine or sense or feel that that's also the rhythm of the universe. It's not yours or mine. It's ours. And that, first of all, we are always in alignment with divine truth. We might forget we are, but that doesn't prevent the alignment from being there, because it is. As Paul said in the Epistle to Romans, there's nothing, absolutely nothing, that can separate you from the love of God. Nothing. Not what you did, not what you didn't do, not the past, not what you're worried about, not your forgetfulness. There's absolutely nothing that can get in the way of or make us in any way separate from God or separate from unconditional love. And we live in this state of consciousness all the time. We're just not aware of it all the time. It's not a burden. It's not a call to do impossible things. It is an awakening and awareness of the truth of who I am. And of course, that's the truth of who you are as well. And imagine or sense or feel what it would be like to live in that divine consciousness for the next couple of minutes, for the next hour or so, for the next day. I am whole. I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall flow from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. back to your awareness of the rhythm of your breathing, pulsing of your heartbeat. Our connection with all other beings. And the knowing in your heart of the truth of who you are. Take a couple of deep breaths again. Stretch a bit. You can open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all for being here. Look forward to seeing you again soon. And maybe next week we'll set a little bit of a different agenda aside from the book. Talk about the reincarnation, the spiritual path, how we got where we got. So anyway, you don't know, no homework. Except be aware of who you are. See you guys.
Thank you, Jerry.
Bye, Jerry. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thanks, everyone.